Listen, everybody, we all know that real estate is the most proven way to build wealth. But why isn't everyone wealthy from real estate then? It's hard to know where to start, and most of the education out there is just complete trash, and you end up investing your money on a series of courses instead of in real estate. That's not how this podcast works. We give you the blueprint to successful real estate investing and bring on guests actually willing to share their secrets. I started my real estate investing journey as a freshman in college when I bought my first duplex and have been in the trenches doing deals ever since. And today, I now own hundreds of millions of dollars of investment property. On this podcast, you will learn what you actually need to know to be a successful active or passive real estate investor. And we'll offer our takes on what's happening today so you can navigate this market and build wealth. I'm Drew Brenneman, and this is the Brenneman Blueprint.
All right. Tom Panos, commercial insurance broker with BKS, an insurance brokerage firm, is on the podcast today. So Tom's been my insurance for quite my insurance agent for quite a while. And the prior episode he was on ended up actually being one of our top episodes, which I kind of thought might be one where it'll be a little bit more of a sleepy episode, too, in the weeds, talking about the finer points of insurance. But yeah, I think everybody's concerned about insurance these days, so I guess I should have not been surprised when it ended up being one of the top episodes. But anyways, yeah, welcome back, Tom.
Thank you for inviting me back for episode two. I'm a commercial insurance broker with BKS Partners, and I specialize in protecting the assets of commercial real estate owners. Geographically, we cover the entire country. I'm licensed in all states to do business. Our firm is a national brokerage firm based out of Tampa, Florida. And so that's kind of where we run the practice here out of Chicago, the real estate practice.
Nice. And then what kind of clients do you serve typically? Like what do they do? Maybe tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, most of my clients from a real estate standpoint are either doing habitational real estate, whether that's apartments or condo complexes, as well as commercial real estate, whether it's lessors risks, mercantile, industrial, you know, commercial type buildings, all types of real estate, and anything, you know, from property and liability and workers' comp, if you have that, directors and officers, umbrellas, of course, you know, all that fun stuff that people need.
So. Nice. And then you also write other insurance too, where I remember you were telling me somebody you had a bunch of restaurants and other.
Yeah, so I have kind of three verticals I work in, the largest being real estate. I also have a couple other verticals, nonprofits that I work in, as well as things like restaurants and hotels. So hospitality, I guess we'll call it. And those are kind of the three things. I try to stay narrowly focused, so I'm an expert in the things I do and that sort of thing. I also do some distribution. There's some meat and food distribution I would cover under the hospitality segment that I continue to do that had been very successful. So that's kind of my three verticals.
Great. Yeah. And I think when we thought about doing another episode, you're kind of giving me a state of the market and talking about the, I'm not sure if it's called loss ratios or what it was, but how much these insurance companies have paid out compared to the premiums they brought in. So why don't we just start there? Like, tell us the state of things, and let's hit on that.
I think we agreed that this time, instead of maybe talking specifically about, you know, coverages and so forth for property owners, that we take more of a macro view and kind of what's driving the market that everybody's feeling these days as they're seeing their renewals or talking to their brokers and so forth. And so I kind of broke it into a few categories, and overall, you know, the P&C market right now for property continues to kind of course correct and you know, it's trying to find its equilibrium. We're trying to get that balance between premiums and losses. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons for that, which I think, you know, I can get into now. And one being, you know, the weather events, right? So we have both primary and secondary perils, and, you know, they're putting a lot of pressure on the insurance market because we're having a lot of both small and large loss events. So in 23, NOAA, which is our national weather service, says we had 25 separate billion-dollar weather and climate disasters in the U.S. alone, which sets a record. The previous record was 22 in 1 year. So we don't see that, you know, dissipating at all or getting better, which is what we would hope for to try to get some reduction. As a matter of fact, from 21 to 23, we saw each year internationally surpassing the $100 billion mark as far as losses, which is, again, is a new normal. And I hate using that word or that phrase, new normal, because we hear it all too often. But it's really kind of what we're seeing these days and what's causing some of the large increases and where we are. And we'll get into reinsurance a little bit. But, you know, other factors that come into play, Drew, are like social inflation or nuclear verdict. So, you know, social inflation is, you know, the rising cost due to, you know, the increased litigation we're seeing these days. Obviously, a lot of legal decisions are much more plaintiff friendly these days, and there's some cultural changing in norms. And then nuclear verdicts, which is defined as anything over $10 million, is kind of going through the roof. We're seeing those become commonplace rather than, you know, the exception to the norm. So as juries continue to pay out these massive verdicts, you know, insurance companies are paying that out, right? And so what they're doing is having to adapt to that. And again, that's creating a new normal, a word that I've now used twice that I don't like using. So, so you know, those are a couple of factors, other factors, right? So the economy. So we've had obviously inflation over the last few years. And we're hoping that that's improving this year. We won't get into a recession. And so for insurance companies, what does that mean, right? Well, that means that with slowing inflation, maybe we'll get a respite from the ballooning claim costs, right? Because as many real estate owners have seen, is as renewals have come up, you're getting what I call the old double whammy. And that is not only are rates increasing because of the losses and some of the other events I just spoke of, but we're also, because of inflation, they're increasing the replacement costs, right? So you're getting a rate on top of a higher building limit, which obviously is the double whammy. And so hopefully with inflation slowing, we won't see those, because what carriers are doing is going, hey, it's costing me a lot more to reconstruct this building than what we had as replacement cost per square foot before. So they're increasing them on the renewals. And so if we see that ease when claims are coming through due to inflation, then we'll see not the double whammy, but maybe, you know, just a small slight rate increase rather than just getting, you know, the ballooning replacement costs also.
I think that's an important piece to maybe talk a little bit more about, because that's, have you saw where, like, just to, I guess, maybe say it back to you, where, so let's say if someone has a, just to put numbers on it, a 10% increase in their total premium in a year, it seems like from the renewals I've saw, like, half of that, so 5%, sometimes even more, is just the building limit going up. So they're saying, yeah, this was worth $10 million last year, now it's worth $10,600,000. And then you're having, you know, half of your, what feels like that 10% increase, or maybe even a little more, come through from just the building limit going up. So is that, have you, what have you saw in terms of, like, if someone has an increase, is there like a range you've saw that's most common? Like, is it like around half, or, you know, or so, or?
You know, sometimes it's more and sometimes it's less, kind of all over the place. It depends on what your replacement cost for square foot was before. And so, and then what they're calculating it to be now, or what they want it to be now. A lot of carriers are going, hey, for Joist and Masonry in Chicago, I want it to be $250 a foot. And so depending on how low you were to begin with, you can see that as a higher percentage of the increase. And we try to manage that during the renewal and go, guys, if you're going to take the building limit up, you know, 20%, we can't have a huge rate increase, you know, and as much as, because you're getting 20% already on this, even though the exposure, you know, is increasing also. So we try to manage that. But if it's, if you're in a ballpark of a replacement cost, I actually see the inflation portion, the replacement cost increasing more than the rates these days. So, which is being a bigger portion of it, like 50% or more is what I'm seeing, if you were in the ballpark on a replacement cost. But sometimes we have these legacy policies where they've been on it for 15 years with a carrier, and the replacement costs were low. I mean, heck, years ago, you know, it'd be at $120-$130 a foot and everybody was happy for replacement costs. And now they want to be upwards of $250 or more a foot. So it's changed dramatically.
Yeah. And it seems like, just looking at the properties I have, where any of the ones where maybe the insurance was, you know, the replacement costs felt a little low, somebody fixed it in the last 12 months where it's not low anymore, where either the lender looked at it and said, hey, we haven't upped this thing since 2016. And then their increase in the replacement cost like 25%, or that one's not over. We're still fighting that one, Tom, if I haven't updated you. So we're still...
We see that. Yeah. You know, we see it from three sources, really. I mean, we see it from the lender standpoint, whether it's a new purchase where we see a lot of that, where they say, hey, we want the replacement cost limit to be a certain amount, or from the existing carrier saying, hey, we, you know, because they're reviewing their books very with a fine tooth comb now and saying, hey, we want to have X amount per square foot or an increase of X percentage. Or then if we're remarketing it to other carriers, right? So I'm shopping your insurance instead of being with Greater New York, I'm, you know, calling Travelers or whoever it may be. And then they're looking at it and coming up with their replacement cost. And so it's been much more varied on what carriers are willing to do. And I think that's kind of driven by reinsurance. We're going to talk about in a minute here and what they've negotiated in their reinsurance treaties and where they are on that, which is driving some of these requirements from some of these carriers.
Yeah. And then you go through all that and you get your building limit increased and your premiums go up. And then you're in a lot of these places and they're pushing to change the coverages. So let's maybe wind, hail, roof deductibles.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's part of the game too. And, you know, so we go through all that, then we present the renewal and, you know, then our clients hate us, of course, and, you know, we're giving them an increase and so forth. But, you know, no, we try to be proactive and let them know what's going on and what we're going to do for the renewal. But we're continuing to see, because of, again, reinsurance and what's happening to the carriers, they're driving things. Like we in the Midwest, we're starting to see wind hail deductibles and them pushing for higher deductibles, period, for losses. Versus, you know, where it was only where in cat exposed areas in the past, you had all that going on and then some, and that's getting even more difficult there. And then you have to start looking at alternative solutions. But in our marketplace, it's starting to creep in where they're going, okay, well, you know, you had a $5,000 deductible. We want to go to 10 or 25 for all other perils. And then for wind and hail, we want to be at 1% or 2% or 5%, you know, which is not something we've seen regularly here in the past, but it's starting to come in, again, driven by reinsurance and what they're going through as far as all the data with where the losses are and how they think they could mitigate those losses and get them in line for, you know, their ratios to be in line for profitability.
And let's make sure we explain the percent, because people are going to be seeing this if it hasn't come to their market. But when you say it, like, okay, you used to have a $5,000, let's say, deductible for all perils. And now for your roof on, and I guess it's only, yeah, on wind and hail claims. So I guess, yeah. So then let's say your roof, wind and hail, if they say it's 5%, maybe walk us through an example, because this is like a dramatic change.
Good question. So obviously if the building limit is low, if it's $100,000, for example, 5% is going to be $5,000, right? And you know, so on and so forth. If it's $1 million, it's going to be $50,000. And so, you know, that the smaller building, if it's 5%, ain't that big of a deal because you had a $5,000 deductible to begin with or higher as a standard deductible. But as we get into larger buildings, million to 10 million, you can do the math, right? 5% becomes a, so it's a percentage of not the loss, but of actually the building limit. So that's where I think people need to recognize what that is and what that becomes from a loss. And so we're seeing this a lot, and we can sometimes negotiate it out, but depends on the age of the roof too, right? So, you know, when a guy's going in and he's got a 15, 20 year old roof, that's what they're going to get, because what's going to happen is that roof is going to need to be replaced. And, you know, it's either going to be the carrier or the owner that's going to replace that roof. And so
yeah, you wait, you know, for the next hailstorm. That's what you
exactly
do.
You know, and they have all kinds of data now, these carriers. You know, they have, they tell us when the roof has been replaced because they have data from companies that have satellite type data, and they can tell by the change of the color of the roof when the roof was actually replaced, believe it or not. So I'll come back and go, hey, that roof was replaced in 2002. It hasn't been replaced in 21 years. We're giving you either a high wind hail deductible or an ACV, an actual cash value being depreciation, replacement cost minus depreciation. So they're just going to give you the aged value, if you will, of that roof rather than giving you replacement costs. Because again, they're trying to protect themselves from that hailstorm or wind that now you have to replace and pay, you know, $300,000-$500,000 for a series of roofs for a premium that's $30,000, which, you know, how do they ever get that back, right? You know, and so that's what they're trying to protect themselves from. And that's what we're seeing creep into the marketplace for sure.
Yeah, a lot of changes. What else is going on in the market?
I think that the other thing we're seeing is kind of, especially in cat exposed areas, some parametric solutions. So what that really means is just something that's not included in a standard policy, in a traditional policy that we now have to go outside of it to get it. And a lot of that is, you know, flood or wind or hail or business income for wind or hail. So one of the things that we're seeing, and I think one of the things I'd like to talk about a little bit is who your lender is, because requirements change by lender, right? So when you're getting Freddie Fannie type loans, the requirements for insurance are very strict. And so I'm seeing a lot of guys buying buildings. They're going, well, he was only paying, you know, $20,000 or $100,000. And why are you this high? Well, we have much stricter requirements. We have higher building limits that they're setting. We have lower deductibles. We have umbrellas that we have to include. And we have ordinance or law that we have to have in there. All kinds of other coverages that are becoming more difficult to get and more costly to get. And so when you're picking a lender, especially on a new purchase or a refi, these are some of the things that I think people need to consider rather than that. Because insurance can vary greatly. Again, especially if you're in a cat exposed area and now you're doing your Freddie Fannie. I'm working on one right now in Florida where I don't know that we can get them the business income loss for wind or hail, which is required by their loan. But I don't know that there's a carrier right now. When I say I don't know, means we haven't found one yet that's actually willing to write the loss of business income for that particular property in where it's located. So those are some of the things that we're seeing happen in the marketplace, and we're trying to go out and get that. But you know, some of the policies on a parametric solutions have minimum premiums that are very expensive and sometimes more expensive to get wind or hail than the actual policy itself. I mean, I had one of my clients yesterday we were looking at that has about a $4 million home, and I don't do a lot of single residents, but he happens to be a commercial client. So I was working with our private risk people, and the actual policy for the less wind or hail, without wind or hail, was $17,000. With wind or hail included, it was $60,000.
So where is that house?
Like on the ocean? It's in near Marco Island.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that's wild. Yeah, I heard somebody has a beach house that I know. I think they just stopped insuring it, or like at this point.
He's on the water and he is self-insuring at this point. You're 100% correct. He's like, I'm a contractor. I could rebuild it if I have to. There's no, you know, the only time he can't do that is if there's a mortgage on it. He doesn't have a mortgage, so he's fine with that. So he's self-insuring now because, you know, he's like, really, the wind or hail is what I need, right? As far as he says it's all block, it's this and that, it's not going to burn. So, in his mind anyway, so he's deciding to self-insure, and people are taking that road sometimes, you know, hard to do. Again, you can't do it, impossible to do if you have a lender on the property. You have to have the coverage in place. But, you know, we're kind of seeing those things.
Oh, man, that actually reminds me. I know someone who's building a spec house right now, and I was asking him something about, they sent me a pro forma for another one. I was like, you don't have any interest or insurance in this deal. He's like, what do you need insurance for? Your contractor has insurance. So, yeah, I know. I was like, well, no, that's for like if they like knock, like burn your house down by accident. Like, what if there's a.
If they don't have builder's risk, yeah, maybe the carrier has a blanket builder's risk policy. They typically don't, but, you know, they need the builder's risk portion of it, as well as his interest is as far as owner's interest, liability. So, there's certainly some things you'll need there. So.
Yeah, they built it all cash, and then no one, you know, with no lender to say like, hey, we need your insurance binder at closing here. It never came up till I looked at it, apparently.
Exactly.
And the weirdest part was they were maybe 3 weeks away from being done. And so they call their insurance carrier and they're like, no, don't buy builder's risk. Just you're close enough.
Yeah. Well, a lot of times you can't get it when you're that close because they don't want to get on it at the end after, you know, they'd like to be on it from the beginning, right? When it started construction, getting on a project midterm for builder's risk carriers, very, very difficult because they're wondering why at that point, right? Why didn't you have it to begin with? And why do you need it now? What happened?
Okay. No, that's interesting. Because the way he explained it was they were like, why bother with it? You're 3 weeks away, which that didn't really make sense. I was like, you should just buy it. And then when you cancel these policies, unless builder's risk, maybe it is different than every other policy, you're going to get a partial refund.
Yeah, there'll be a certain minimum earned on the policy, but he would get some of it back. Some are fully earned, so it just depends on the carrier and stuff. So maybe that's what he was looking at. Again, being cat exposed, it might have been fully earned, right? And it would have been for the entire project amount, they wouldn't have written it for just a small amount. So it was cost prohibitive since he was that close to being done that it didn't even make sense to do it right now.
Well, nice. Yeah, I think the biggest surprise to me is just when you see these wind hail deductibles change where, you know, you kind of make sense where it's like the building went up, you know, we got fortunate where our insured, you know, our building limits weren't being increased much and now they go up, you know, 5-10% to catch up with the inflation we've had the last few years. So that makes sense when it happens. But yeah, some of these deals, like to your example, where, yeah, you have a 5% wind hail deductible on a $10 million building. I mean, like in Chicago, it's like your roof is maybe it's a $500,000, probably not. So it's like you don't even have roof insurance if you at that point for at least those.
And that's kind of what we're seeing a lot. They're trying to get away from it, you know, and I think that leads into kind of the combined ratio or a reinsurance market that I think was driving all this, which I've referred to many times as we're talking about some of the solutions. And I think that, you know, the combined ratio for the carriers, and it varies by carrier, right? So that's basically, you know, the incurred claims and expenses they have over the premium earned. So if it's less than, you know, 100, they're making an underwriting profit. If they're not, they're obviously losing money. So, I mean, I've had carriers that I know that are writing real estate in Chicago specifically that over the last 2 years were like 1.47, 1.35 or higher, some of them. And obviously that's not sustainable. They're you know, for every dollar they're taking in, they're paying almost $1.50 out. That's not a very good business model, obviously. So they're taking actions again, like what I call the double whammy. They're taking, hey, we need $265 a foot replacement cost, and they're increasing their rates. And, you know, in the past with a lot of the carriers, we could maybe negotiate and say, hey, we believe the building limit should be X versus Y. And they would work with us. The conversation now is no, we're not working with, this is what we have to have. And that's because the reinsurance. So when they have those kind of ratios, they have to buy reinsurance. And so reinsurance being, you know, they carry a certain amount of the exposure and then they buy insurance, reinsurance to cover the rest of it. And so, you know, when you're seeing the combined ratio of the entire market, property market in the US be 109, what do you think the reinsurance carriers, which are taking the brunt of that, are feeling? Obviously, they're going to want to, you know, look to take increases. So 2023 was a very chaotic reinsurance market. We saw huge increases and a lot of parameters changing, like we talked about, the wind or hail and the higher deductibles and very restrictive. So we kind of now seeing in 24, it was much more in order. It was much more of a balance between the supply and demand for reinsurance and property. And so I think we had a better alignment, but at those higher premiums. And so I think what we're finding is it's stabilizing, but I don't think that means that we're going to see, you know, the rates come down. I think we're stabilizing at those higher rates. And although we're not maybe not seeing huge rate increases due to reinsurance, we're not seeing the numbers go down either if they're reaching kind of that equilibrium where they feel that, you know, their projected combined ratio for the top 20 carriers for 2024 is projected to between at the current rates be between 92 and 96. Again, projected because, you know, we're still in 24. We don't know what that's going to turn out to be, but that's what they're projecting based on what they believe they're going to have losses versus what they're now pricing things at. So reinsurance has played a big portion of that because of the big disasters we talked about, the big losses that we're seeing, but they've also priced that in now. So we're expecting that. We're not expecting prices to come down. We're not expecting the big shock increases like we were seeing in 22 and 23 and that sort of thing. So maybe a more stabilized environment. Still very restrictive because, again, reinsurance is, they're taking in a lot of data and they're looking at, you know, what data the carriers have on the buildings and the exposures they have. So what do you have on roofs? What do you have on age of buildings? What do you have on updates? So what do you have on inspections? And so the more data the carriers can provide, which becomes a very big problem for sometimes building owners or, you know, people like myself that have to go through and do all that, it does help their rates, though, if they can prove that they do have a well-established book and a well-protected book and not, you know, a bunch of buildings with roofs that are 22 years old.
Yeah, and the way the reinsurance market works, what are they? Okay, so let's say you got a carrier. We'll just throw a name on it. So it's like, let's say Travelers. They are going to buy reinsurance from like a Berkshire Hathaway or a Lloyd's or a group like that. But what are they buying? How does that policy look? Where they're going to say Travelers will go, we're going to insure the first $5 billion of losses, and then after that, we have a policy with Berkshire Hathaway that'll kick in for 100%, or it's like a.
Yeah, no, it's transparent to the insured, like yourself or any. It's Travelers paper, and that's what it is. It's just how it's supported in the background for them as far as that. So it's not a layered program. That's a different type of program, which we could talk about. But if your carrier is just Travelers and your limit is $22 million in that building, it's just Travelers. But how much of Travelers is carrying, it might be the first two or five, and then reinsurance is paying the rest, but it's transparent to you on a claim basis or on anything else. The policy will just sell Travelers paper on the policy, so it won't be, you know, very apparent to you how that's broken up right now. It's just, it's factored into their rates more than anything else or their parameters as far as deductibles.
Yeah, which that part, yeah, thanks for explaining that, because it may be the way I asked it wasn't making, was going to cause confusion. But yeah, that I understood, where I know that it's the, you know, it's the carrier is buying the reinsurance. You're not, it's not like a dual insurance that you're, you know, you got to submit a claim to both if you're the insured party. But I was more just curious how it worked for the carrier, because I've never known that. Like, does the carrier take 100% of the losses, like up till a certain amount? And then when they blow through that, then the reinsurance kicks in?
Yeah, that's typically the way it goes. They'll be, you know, what we call self-insured to a certain amount, and then they'll buy reinsurance above that. And it varies by carrier what that limit is. But yes, exactly. So they carry the paper for the first X amount, and then they're supported on the back end for higher limits. And so that's why sometimes when we're working with an underwriter, they'll be like, well, we have to go. Sometimes they have to go get approval from like the reinsurance underwriter or something on some paper on a large project. I'm not talking about a $5 million building, but not, we're now looking at a schedule that $500 million, then it's going to take a little bit more time to get some approvals and so forth. Again, depending on where they are and what we're asking. And so they might have to go back and do that. It wouldn't necessarily be the Travelers. That's more when we're doing more of a customized solution, you know, for that.
Okay. Yeah. No, just always curious how that works. I know the insurance company, yeah, is then buying insurance basically on their book of business, but I didn't know when it kicked in. Is it?
Yeah, it varies. It varies. Yeah, it varies by carrier. Yeah, exactly. Like sometimes we'll get carriers that say, you know, we can only give you an umbrella, for example, if we can talk about casualty for a minute, of $2 million because that's all we can, you know, we can do. And they're not buying reinsurance to be able to offer any higher limits. So they'll carry the first two themselves, and they're not buying any reinsurance on casualty because it just became too expensive. And so you have to go get another layer. But, you know, maybe I misunderstood, but I was talking about a little bit about a layered program. And that's something we're seeing kind of come into, again, large schedules where I might get one carrier to come in and do the first $10 million and then get another carrier to come in and do 25 and another carrier do 30. And so that is where we're creating our own layers for a large program because we can't get a carrier to give us the full limit, which we're seeing a lot these days, again, because they're limited on what they can do by coinsurance or their own underwriting. They don't want to take on $150 million limit all on their own. So they're going to offer the first 10. And so now we have to sit and structure layers to get to the limit that we want for that particular building or that particular schedule. So that's another way we're trying to, you know, appease the market or work around the market, because before, you know, you said, hey, I need a $150 million limit. They were like, sure, no problem. Well, we're not seeing that today. So it's very segmented. The other thing we're seeing people do, or we're trying to do to alleviate some of these things, is if you have a very large, broad schedule and we're putting a master policy together, and let's say the replacement cost or of the entire schedule is $500 million, you may only buy $100 million, right? Now, what's the biggest building? You know, we don't expect all the buildings to be total losses for the entire year, so they're buying a loss limit of, say, 50, 100, 200 million instead of buying the entire 500 million to try to, you know, keep those costs down. And so, again, depending on lenders, depending on where they are, the size of the buildings, parameters, it can be done. Sometimes it can't be done. But those are some of the ways we're trying to look at schedules to have it make sense so we can get, you know, not some crazy number, or even get the coverage, because sometimes you can't get somebody to write that entire schedule. So we're trying to different creative ways to get.
Have you saw the agency lenders go for that? Or is that more people that have a different lender than Fannie and Freddie?
Yeah, mostly different lenders than Fannie and Freddie. You know, they're you know, very strict on what they want and that sort of thing. And so they would probably not be into that. It would depend, but most likely they wouldn't be, but it would have to be other type schedules that aren't necessarily Freddie Fannie.
So what lender types then have you seen that done with, pretty much as banks? Well, then, or
whether it's, you know, the Chases or the local banks of the world, or, you know, some other lender, just, you know, we find Freddie and Fannie is the most restrictive and the most of, you know, checking everything with a fine tooth comb, as far as, I mean, whether it's a renewal or new business, you know, I think we've been through it, is when you're doing a Freddie Fannie, is they're like, hey, send us the sample certificate so we can even approve these coverages before even coverage is bound or the loan is closed. And so they're, you know, telling you, hey, this is the building limit we want. Here's a business income we want. Here's the parameters. Here's the language. And they go through it, you know, dotting I's and crossing T's very, very thoroughly to make sure you have what you want, a la that loan in Florida I was just talking about. And he didn't have business income listed on his loss of business income for wind or hail, because wind or hail was excluded, and they want it on there. So not every carrier is going to go through it with, not every lender is going to go through it with a fine tooth comb and have professionals that know what they're looking at, look at it and make sure that everything is there and meets their requirements. As you well know, I think Freddie or Fannie has a several page document that says, you know, X number of units you need, you know, you can go up to this deductible and you need to have this excess layer. And so it's very detailed versus other lenders that, you know, we whether they're local or other, even nationals, aren't as restricted. Let's put it that way.
Yep. Yeah. No, I remember that, where they have it broken out like by, yeah, height of floors, where, oh, you added a 4-story to your schedule, it's, you got to go up to a 10 million umbrella now.
Exactly. And umbrellas, you know, are like, we've been talking a lot about property, but I think casualty is another factor where we're seeing that, because of these nuclear verdicts we talked about earlier and what juries are doing and being much more friendly to plaintiffs, is that we're seeing casualty starting to bump up. Actually, in 24, they expected casualty to have a big increase, which didn't materialize at the beginning of the year for reinsurance, which is a good thing. We're still seeing it in umbrellas being difficult. Like, for example, I have a schedule here in Chicago, a large schedule, probably a couple hundred million now, maybe 225 million, several buildings. And they used to buy every year a $100 million umbrella. That's just what they wanted. They wanted a $100 million umbrella. Well, we can't really get them a $100 million umbrella anymore, you know, in a cost-effective manner. Yeah, if they want to spend $3 million, we can probably get it. But, you know, that's not reality. So they're buying a $50 million now, which is probably okay, you know, but, you know, none of us have a crystal ball. I don't know what's going to happen, but they're very cautious. They've owned these buildings forever. They're well funded and they wanted $100 million, but it's very difficult to get those higher limits now. because of, you know, the marketplace and casualty. So we're starting to see that creep into the casualty side of the equation, especially umbrellas right now, but also on rates for liability, which we rate on a per door basis. You know, depending on where you are, it could have been $30 or $50, and now we're seeing $80 to $200 per door on a liability basis. So now we'll be soon talking about the triple whammy: the rate replacement cost increase, the rate increase on property, and the increase on liability and umbrella. So it's very fun.
I feel like that's what we were talking about last year. I mean, we were, you know, I'm like, this umbrella price is crazy, and then you're hit me with the story of the all these umbrellas you couldn't even get anymore.
Yeah, they're really, you know, we own a company that runs a program, an umbrella program, and you know, they are now, any new business has to be year built, has to be, you know, a later construction, say 2000 or later, versus before it could be anything, and the rates are, you know, going through the roof again because of these nuclear type losses. They've had a lot of claims, and they're looking at it going, we just can't continue to do that in certain types of buildings, and so it limits, you know, the people that are willing to write umbrellas, and therefore it's increasing the rates. And you know, we have access to all those programs, but it's still a difficult umbrella market where, you know, umbrellas for dozens and dozens of years was, you know, an afterthought, and, you know, you could you know, get one you know, in 30 seconds or less, just go on and rate it, and you'd have an umbrella. That's unfortunately not the case anymore. It's much more well underwritten, a lot of data. They're looking at the underlying quotes, they're looking at losses, they're looking at a lot more data for those also. So that's, you know, that's where we are for casualty also. So it's not easy right now for, you know, building owners across the board, and or carriers, you know, based on the combined ratios and stuff. It's not like they're, you know, going away, as I call, fat, dumb, and happy, and on real estate anyways. You know, whether they're making money on other lines is debatable, obviously, but and by no means am I saying we're going to have to pass the basket for the insurance carriers. I'm not feeling sorry for them. They'll be okay, but nonetheless, on real estate type accounts, they haven't had you know, some very good years over the last 5.
Yeah. What? Anything else that comes to mind in terms of the market then?
One other thing that I would talk about would just be, you know, kind of construction and being aware of what you're buying. We're seeing a lot of podium style construction, which I think you and I have talked about, which is basically, first floor is usually made out of block or concrete or so forth, and then we're frame building or wood framing above it. And unfortunately, what that causes, if there's a fire, the heat reflects off the masonry on the bottom and exacerbates the fire is what our carriers are telling us, and so they're having larger losses. So we have some carriers that won't even write them, period. They won't write podium construction. So all I would caution people to do is, when you're looking at a new property or you're looking at, you know, look at construction of the building also. Is it sprinklered, age of it? Again, the roof, be careful what the age of the roof is, because it's going to make your life easier or harder, you know, based on the parameters that you'll get on the age of the roof and the construction. So, you know, and I guess, you know, having said all this, people are like, well, what should I do? Should I just punt and sell all my buildings? Which I get that question a lot. They're like, this is getting unbelievably high. What do I do? And so, you know, for us as agents, we can only control what we can control. So we try to get started early and have conversations with our insureds. I know, you know, with you and my other insureds, we try to give you a state of the market every 6 months, let you know what's going on in the marketplace. So you're not blindsided and go, well, what the hell happened? I thought, you know, we're going to get a 30% decrease this year. Well, obviously, based on the marketplace, this is not, you know, realistic at this point. So, you know, we get started early, try to get started early with your broker and make sure you're having those conversations. You know, I would tell people to work with real estate professionals that know, have the markets and know what they're doing and know some of the options and that are out there that they can, you know, do. That can be creative, like I talked about, some of those layered programs, so some of those loss limit programs or parametric solutions. These are creative solutions we're trying to come up with to alleviate some of the pain for our our insureds. You know, and sometimes it's even segmenting schedules. You know, sometimes we have these master policies that have properties across the country, and sometimes segmenting or pulling out certain portions of construction, whether it's frame versus joisted masonry, or for Texas versus Illinois, and segmenting the schedules and looking at it that way. In addition, what we're trying to do as a carrier is late last year, we have a proprietary program for real estate that we use for some of the tougher placements where the standard market can't necessarily do it. And so we developed this specifically for that to help our clients. And that's another, again, I guess, tool in our toolbox that we can use that maybe some of the other brokers don't have, which has been very successful for us. And so, you know, all those things I would just, you know, caution people or remind them is the way to go about it. And calling your broker a week before, or a new broker a week before, with a large schedule saying, I got my renewal and it went up 70%, isn't going to be very successful.
Yeah. And then, and you have access to these different, you call them markets, but I call them programs or carriers.
Carriers, that, programs.
Know,
yeah.
Not everyone would have, cause I know I have a group of my like smaller, older properties with a carrier that it sounded like you guys were the only person with that program in the Midwest, or maybe at all. Maybe, I don't know if that's what you're talking about, is the tougher properties, but you maybe want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So as far as, I haven't actually, I call them markets, carriers, same things, you know? And so, yeah, we do a ton of real estate. We run a real estate practice out of this office. And so we have access to all the markets necessary to do, you know, across the country to do what we need to do. Not everybody has that. And so I think that's an advantage for us, as well as having some proprietary programs. At times when carriers start a new program and want to come into the marketplace, they will talk to people like ourselves first and come into the marketplace with us. And to do that, if we're going to introduce them to the market and do that, we're also going to ask for an exclusive. So we'll get an exclusive for at least a couple of years. And in our case, with our proprietary program, it's just ours and nobody accesses that. So that's just ours for us to use. But there's other programs that come into the marketplace and give us an exclusive simply because of the amount of real estate we do and how much business we can give them and introduce them to the marketplace. And then they'll expand out from there. It won't be a lifetime thing, but it certainly helps us in those few years to be able to introduce the program. And we help them write parameters, like what they should write, what limits, how they should price it, you know, so we're also giving them a lot of feedback on how to develop the program. So it's a double-edged sword that we get some stuff we want, they get some stuff they want, they get some market knowledge and that. And so we try to work in those ways also, and it's been successful. So in some of your properties, obviously you've seen that.
Great. Yeah, I think that, let's just wrap up with how to, if any other ideas on how to navigate this market come to mind. So I heard like, you know, be trying to shop for your renewal as early as possible. Understanding how this stuff works. So if you hear you have a, you know, 5%, wind hail deductible, that's not 5%. Maybe like how co-insurance with like medical insurance works, where, oh, okay, I just pay 5%.
Or the premium, right? It's not anything that like that. It's 5% of the actual billing limit, right? So, I think, yes, details are important. Starting early, and then, you know, as a real estate insurance professional, it's my job to kind of explain some of the options. Yes, we can get this, we can't get that. This is why this carrier is. Because in the past, if you gave me a property, I could give you an indication, or I know what that price would be and who would write it in 3 minutes or less. Well, it's not that easy anymore, because carriers have become very segmented on what they'll do. Whether it's podium, some will be like, oh, I'm out, or it's choice in masonry, but it's in this part of the city, I'm not going to write it. Or if it's suburban, I'm going to do this. And then the other thing is if you have losses, I haven't spoken about that before, but I think it's important to know that, you know, when you have losses, everything kind of gets thrown out the window, depending on what that, again, that loss ratio is your account, positive for that carrier or not. So if you're paying in 30 grand and they just paid out a $500,000 roof claim, they're probably not going to stay on that policy. And so now you have to go out and shop with a loss run that shows a $500,000 loss. So how is that going to get priced by that new carrier? Probably not well, right? And so, and that's where we got to get started early and sometimes get creative on how the creative part is, what do I do with that one building now? Do I try to take that off and let that price be where it will, you know, high by itself, and then leave the rest of the schedule someplace to try to get a better rate? Or how do we go about it creatively to try to sell this to the underwriters to get the best rates for our client? And I think that's where an experienced professional that can think out of the box a little bit and think about different ways to do this. We're not trying to pull the wool over anybody's eyes. We're just trying to say, what's a way we can do this to get the best outcome for our client? I think that's where, again, starting early, having somebody who has done this before, that can be creative, that can just is not sitting there going, well, I'm just going to renew this policy and you know, go back to the golf course. You know what I mean? That's just not, you know, really possible if you're really in this market right now. You know, maybe years ago, but not anymore.
That's true. There's less golfing for insurance agents right now. There's too many renewal conversations to have.
Yeah, we're you know, and like I said, you know, and we're still getting answers late from carriers, right? And people are frustrated with that, and I understand that, because as I tell my insurers, I would like to get it to you, you know, like I used to be able to, 3-4 weeks in advance, and we'd have the conversation. And now we're running into, especially if you have losses and we're coming up against it and trying to find a solution and getting somebody to write it, we may be a week before or a few days before. And I hate that, because that's not only stressful for you guys, but it's really stressful for us, right? And so people realize that. They're like, well, he's trying to, you know, hold me up for, you know, and that's the farthest from the truth I can ever tell people, at least for myself. I can't speak for everybody, but that I'd rather have it done a long time ago and be done with it rather than waiting till the last second. But again, depending on where it is, what the carriers are doing on losses and so forth, we may be, you know, working really hard at the renewal date, and it's it becomes stressful. So again, less golf for us, Drew, that's for sure. So.
Yeah. And then the last step is, of course, get in touch with Tom Panos. So how do people get a hold of you, Tom?
Yeah. Thanks, Drew. My direct line at the office is 847-940-4228, or my email is tom.panos, P-A-N-O-S, at bks-partners.com. So tom.panos at bks-partners.com. And be happy to, you know, talk to you about your schedule and reach out, and we can. I've had a lot of good conversations through the first podcast with people as far as reaching out and going, hey, this is what my schedule is and what can we do? And we've been successful in helping many of them.
Great. Appreciate it, Tom. Thanks for coming on.
Great. Thanks for having me, Drew. Had a lot of fun. Thank you.
If you learned something from today's show, leave a review and hit that subscribe button wherever you enjoy your podcast. Dive deeper into real estate investing on Brenneman Capital's website, Brenneman.com, where we have numerous free resources and information that can help both active and passive real estate investors. Accredited investors can get started today as a passive investor in our multifamily investment opportunities by hitting the Invest Now button on our website.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of Drew Brenneman and guests as of the date of recording, and do not purport to reflect the views or opinions of Brenneman Capital LLC and its subsidiaries. Views and opinions are provided for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon or deemed as investment or tax advice or an offer to buy or sell securities. The speaker cannot be held responsible for any direct or incidental loss incurred by applying any information offered.